The following was produced by Pirate Radio Studios, Incorporated.
Hello, my name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland. Greetings, salutations, hello, hey, how's it going? Welcome to another edition of this episode, or this podcast here from Radioland. Of course, last week we were talking to Mr. Willie Hall, and this week we continue on with that conversation. We'll get into some really in-depth stuff with the Blues Brothers. You know, he was, of course, in the band as their drummer, was in both the films, and has been constantly working on a few other things, too. We'll find out what else he's working on here in this episode. And we've got some more music for you, too. Of course, I should mention as well that all the cuts that you're going to hear, I think there's only like two or three of them, but all the music that you hear in this episode are used by permission from the artists themselves, including Mr. Willie Hall, who was involved in every bit of it. So it's there for educational purposes, so you kind of get an idea of how things are going. You're going to hear about the theme from Shaft. You know, he played the drums on that with Isaac Hayes and the Movement. And the story about how that song came about was fascinating. So kick back, relax, we'll get back into it. We start with the discussion of the movies.
Well, you were in Soul Man too, weren't you?
Yeah, with Samuel Jackson and Bernie Mac.
Freaking
yeah.
Love that movie.
That was great. Yeah, that was great. Movie. You know who was wonderful on Soul Man? Bernie Mac. I got to give it to you.
Oh man,
funny guy.
Samuel Jackson. All respect to Sam and his profession. I think he's a wonderful actor.
Right.
You know, he came from a life of drugs, from what I understood, but from what I heard. But that has no pending on a man's or a woman's life. But he's a perfectionist at his craft, and I respect him totally. But Bernie Mac, man, you know, my mother used to tell me, oh, I love Bernie Mac. He's so funny. But it was the MF word that kind of turned me off on him, you know.
Yeah, because
I heard MF so many times, and usually, you know, white people say if you use MF a lot, that means you got a shortage of vocabulary.
So my mom always told me.
You don't know many words to describe whatever you're
not
trying
intelligent,
to say.
Young man. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, but sometimes there's just no other word that'll do. I'm sorry, sometimes there's just no other word.
On the way over here, Mr. Richard Self from Freelance Video One, I used that word on the way over here. Yeah. He was telling me, he said, hey, man, just forget that. Just think positive. We were talking about a different subject, but man, that was the only word that I could use to describe this.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it's just there is nothing. There's nothing else.
Speaking of movies, and we'll get back to the Blues Brothers in a minute because I have this tune here.
Wow.
Yeah. Isaac Hayes in the Movement.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Laying down the theme from Shaft. Oh, Richard Roundtree. I mean,
that's you on the 16th on the iPad right there.
Yeah. The height of the blaxploitation movement that was coming out there, and Richard just became a god in Hollywood as a result
of
this.
That's right.
Who all was in that band there that you were working with? Do you remember?
Oh, besides the Memphis Symphony, and you know, Isaac was a perfectionist in this way. He actually hired the Memphis Symphony later on to go on tour with him.
I didn't know that.
At one time, we carried three buses.
Oh, my goodness.
And the white guys from
traveling circus,
and the white men and women from the symphony, they went, oh my god, these guys are just too much, you know. You know, but eventually we got a lot of the guys from the symphony to come and hang on our bus,
because on
the black guys bus, on the band's bus, man, we were gambling, you know.
We were having fun.
We had three or four big boom boxes going, you know.
Oh yeah.
And the girls were dressed half naked, you know, so it was a lot of fun.
Meanwhile, the cello section from the Memphis Symphony is going, oh, I don't know about these Negroes. This is gonna be
we had some of them, man, that we didn't see until showtime.
They were scared to death of you guys.
And we stopped at a burger joint, and they'd eat on up the road, you know what I mean?
But that's funny.
It was so much fun, though, man.
Now, Isaac, he was a tough guy to work for, though, wasn't he? I mean, he was I thought he was like a perfectionist and just a step above it.
He was a perfectionist, but he was so cool at it, man. He knew what he wanted all the time.
Right.
Isaac had what's called that third eye. he would be thinking of something, and he'd look up in the third eye. You know how you look up in, right. like in the top of your head up
yeah.
there?
Yeah.
And the harmony note or the harmony phrase or whatever would just come right instantly, man.
Right.
And if you ever interview any of the people from the symphony during that time, they'll tell you, man, Isaac was a genius. And I say that not to appease him. Or any of his family.
He was
a genius.
So
man.
Theme from yeah. Shaft, obviously, now, if I understand the story right, it came, the film was in essence kind of done, and they were looking to have the theme done, so Isaac's name got thrown into the hat, and it was like, we want Isaac to do it. So Isaac comes together and he gets all you guys together and says, now here's, we got to come up with this. Is that how that went?
Isaac was the last choice. Gordon Parks was the director, and MGM was failing at their attempts of being a successful movie venture. And you know, whenever most companies, the cliche is when most companies are failing, they'll put a black guy in charge. You know, so that when
you know what, I heard it.
Really,
that's good advice,
really.
Actually.
So that when the company fails, if company is failing, they'll put a black person in charge. So that when the company actually hits rock bottom, it'll be blamed on the black.
They can blame on the black guy.
I heard a comedian actually said make that point about Obama in the first election. He said. He goes, basically, it's like a car is heading towards a cliff, and all the white guys are like, fuck it, let's let the black guy drive.
But, you know,
I've heard that theory before.
That's a little something that goes around, you know, in our neighborhood. But so we're accustomed to hearing that. But that was actually what happened, I heard, with MGM. Now, Gordon Parks come from a line of successes as a writer, a film director, and the whole nine yards, as an author. Anyway, he had done this film about Shaft, and they didn't have any idea that all this was going to blow up.
Right.
You know, they didn't know there was going to be success at this. It was a last attempt at a ditch effort, okay? So Isaac Hayes' name was thrown up in a group of people. Marvin Gaye, Curtis Mayfield, a lot of people were in line. Were in line for that position.
Right.
What happened was, Al Bell, who was such a driving force, you know, he dropped them pills out. He has to get to going like a fish. But anyway, he was a driving force, and he just happened to be a moving force and met up with Gordon Parks. And Al has that gift of gab. He's such a smart guy, man. I love Al Bell, man. And so through his collaboration with Gordon Parks came a try from Isaac Hayes. And so... Now, this is weird. Show you how technology has changed so fast. When Isaac got his rhythm section, because Isaac was a successful writer and producer all the time, and even at the time of Shaft, he had just sold two gold albums. Anyway, so when Isaac came in the studio and we all got together, we had to view the film of Shaft on this little moviola. The screen was about that big.
Y'all were having a
Had to look through that little silver unit.
Yeah.
And screen was about that big. So you got four afros
all looking at a 4-inch screen trying to figure what the hell out. What is that? Move your head.
Well, yeah. Hey man, don't mess up my curls. You know what I mean.
And did that have audio at all, or was that just film? Right.
There was audio.
Okay.
But. The portion we viewed the portion that we had to put music to, which was the intro. So what Isaac did was he called me Clarence. He said, Clarence, come and look at this. So I looked at it. We took the tempo of the footsteps of Richard Roundtree coming up out the subway.
Right.
Yeah.
When Richard got to the top step and started his strut down Broadway, because
it's very methodical.
It is.
That's where the
Isaac told me, said, play 16ths to his footsteps. I drug the hi-hat over to the moviola, and I'm playing, you know. And we established the tempo from his footsteps walking down Broadway.
Wow.
That's how we got the tempo for Shaft. The guitar players, Charles Skip Pitts, who's deceased now, great guy, man, played on so many hits, Wilson Pickett, I'm in Love, the Isley Brothers, It's Your Thing, a whole bunch of stuff. Anyway, Skip had invented this lick with the wah-wah pedal, and at that time we had, you're a guitar player, at that time we had the Maestro box.
Right.
Okay, which you could get the, all that stuff on there. And so Skip had come up with his own little sound, and Isaac was familiar with it, but he just didn't have a place to place it. But finally came the Shaft, and he had a place to put the wah-wah with the 16th.
I mean, that track revolutionized the way people use wah-wah pedals.
Yeah,
I mean,
but you know, all of that had been used before.
Right.
The 16 notes on the hi-hat had been used by the Temptations prior to that.
Yeah.
And the wah-wah pedal had always been...
Well, Jimmy had been wailing on the thing for a while, but using it almost as a rhythm instrument.
Yeah,
The
way we did it and the way Skip did it and the way I did it, you know, it was phenomenal.
It's almost, you could, the porn industry ripped that whole sound off.
Well, so did the disco.
So did the disco.
Well, they
kind of
ripped
the
funk, though, too.
Yeah, they sure did. But I mean, you guys were just laying that groundwork right there over the little 4-inch screen trying to see how it worked.
So when you guys were doing the, you'd asked earlier, so I had always heard it was essentially the Barquets with the Memphis Symphony Orchestra. Is that
What happened was, I was still in the Barquets.
Right.
James Alexander was still in the Barquets. Michael Toews was still in the Barquets.
And that was, because y'all worked with Isaac on more than just that project, right?
Well, after that event. What happened was, the first venture was this, Hot Buttered Soul.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Al Bell had come up with this idea to release 36 albums at once. It was called Soul Explosion. We went to Arden Studios, which at the time was on National Boulevard. That was Terry Manning, the engineer, and John Fry was the owner and engineer. So we practically cut at least 12 albums there.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. Hot Buttered Soul being one, and the album with David Porter being another, and Emotions and Albert King. The King Does the King's Things.
Right.
That was when we recorded... 9 or 10 of we covered Elvis Presley songs for Albert King.
So
the whole Soul Explosion project was done in mostly at Arden. Some of the artists had their own stuff already recorded, but anyway, Al Bell had the gall to release all these albums at one time. So,
which is brilliant if you think about it.
That's covering all the bases. It was phenomenal.
That's
but
amazing.
You know what?
You'd never see that happen today.
And you know what? If Hot Buttered Soul hadn't have come out of the group, none of the 30 some albums didn't make it. Hot Buttered Soul.
That was the linchpin. Huh?
Because of Johnny Baylor. Because of the gangsters from New York, that Hot Buttered Soul made it. You know, so you're familiar with the Johnny Baylor exploits and all that. That's a whole different story, but. I was one of the only guys that they took to as a partner. As you will notice, if you see stuff by Luther Ingram and Tommy Tate, you'll see that Willie Hall and Johnny Baylor co-produced different things. They took me under their wings out of all the people in Memphis, you know, even. And I always thought it was a good thing, but then sometimes I don't know, you know, Johnny Baylor Association kind of, you know, it kind of put a twang in people's.
Kind of make it put their teeth on edge
a
little bit,
man. Johnny was such a guy, man.
Well, let's play the theme from Shaft and remind everybody about that song. And it's just one of those things that rattles around in your head for years, and when you hear it again, you go, "Wow!"
You know, I want to just throw this out there. You know, in the '90s, there was a resurgence of funk, and there was a lot of white kids that were all about the theme from Shaft, and it almost became a joke of itself. And if you really listen to it, if you listen to any of that stuff off that entire soundtrack,
it's phenomenal stuff.
Isaac Hayes was nothing less than a Beethoven or a Bach as far as composition, as far as writing the stuff. It's fantastic. I just wanted to throw that out there because
let's get into it. We'll take a brief break after that. We'll come back. We'll wrap things up. We'll find out where you're at these days, what you got going on, and I even got a little Blues Brothers we'll end our bit with.
Wonderful.
All right, here's a little Isaac Hayes here. Willie Hall on the drums here at Radio Memphis.
dick, that's a sex machine to all the chicks.
You're damn right.
Who is the man that would risk his neck for his brother, man? Can you dig it? Cat that won't cop out when there's things you're all about. Right on. You see, this cat chef is a bad mother.
Shut your mouth.
What I'm talking about, chef?
Yeah, he can do it.
He's a complicated man, but no one understands him but his woman.
John Shack.
We are the radio station other radio stations listen to. We are Radio.
Yes, indeed. Back in the studio here with a special edition of Booze and Blues, and our good friend, well, we just met him, but he's become a very good friend of ours, Mr. Willie Hall.
That's a hero of mine.
I tell you what, Willie, you are more than welcome to come down here at any time. My house is your house. This, if you've got something you ever want to get off your chest and come down and be a part of it, you come on and do it.
Well, I appreciate the invitation. And I love you guys already, man. It's almost like we're twins. You know?
Separated at birth, Willie.
Now, there you go with that separation. No, but I love you guys, man. You've made me feel real welcome, man. And, you know, I've had a great time here.
One of the things that I will always remember, and, you know, being a fan of the movie, of the Blues Brothers, my favorite scene in there is the sequence there right before the big car chase where you're working with Cab Calloway. that whole thing with the band, and then it transitions to the Blues Brothers themselves, and they make their escape, and they're sneaking behind the drum riser. And they've been told where the trap door is. And you just nonchalantly give this little salute with the drumstick.
Yeah.
And it is such a really cool, innocent thing. It's like, man, I got you back. And yeah. and the band just carries on for like an hour, it seems.
You know, they kind of considered me as the band leader at that point. That's why the nod to them, because if I'm not mistaken, Danny's last words as he and John were going down the trap door was, "You and the band keep playing. We're
That's
going
right.
to do something."
That's right.
My answer was, "You got it, brother."
Yeah.
You know, because when they came to pick us up in that Ramada Inn, which was actually, you know, in that scene when they came to pick us up in the Ramada Inn, when we had the shag carpet as covering the instruments.
Murph and the Murph
that.
Tones.
Yeah. Murph and the Magic Tones.
Murph and the Magic Tones, yes. Right. Murph Tones, yeah, what do I think it, yeah.
Well, you know, when they came to pick us up, the scene where we filmed that was at the airport in Chicago, O'Hare. And that was the actual grounds where a plane had crashed a few years prior to that.
Yeah.
So that was a very historical moment for us. I'll give you a funny scene about that, and I hope nobody gets upset about this, but that night of filming that scene where John and Danny met in the telephone booth, and
yes.
Carrie Fisher blows the booth up with all the coins
right.
and all that.
And they're reaching for the quarters, which is fun.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So we're at this place at O'Hare. Anyway, that night, so filming was late, and everybody was a little tired. And so Murphy Dunn,
yeah.
who played the keyboard player, you know, we all were doing a little ganja, you know.
No, the hell you say.
You shattered my image.
Good Christian voice like you, I don't believe it.
Oh, my God. Oh, my estimation of you just went way up.
This is a family show, Willie.
It's even become legal in some states, you know?
Oh, yes, thank God.
Yeah, I just moved.
I
just moved recently.
I just moved recently.
But anyway, so there was a little ganja going on. And so that night, you know, the whole movie industry is hurry up and wait, as you guys know. Mm-hmm. It's unlike recording. Well, recording is sort of like that.
But you're on the clock when you're recording.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, thank God.
Yeah.
All right.
But so everybody was bored and all of that. And the Blues Brothers were known to sneak off a bit. So Murphy Dunn told me, he said, hey, man, come ride with me. So we jumped in the pink Cadillac and the Bluesmobile. So we were going to go out. Oh, Murphy had one like this.
You know, he had a hog leg at that point.
It was like size of a quarter. So we were going to just, supposedly, we were just going to ride down. Like, you know, every exit on the freeway is like, the first exit is like a quarter of a mile sometimes, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
But we messed around and got on the turnpike.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
So we just going to slide off and take a doobie, well, you know, to the next exit and come back. Hey, man, it was 2 hours down. Which means it was 2 hours back.
Yes.
4 hours, man. Man, when we got back, John Landis was full of fire, man. There was smoke coming.
Where the hell were you guys?
Man, there was smoke coming out of his nose and his ears, man. He was mad.
And yours, too.
But you know what? Well, you know what? I was just like, oh. I was like, okay, man, whatever. But, man, and it was terrible. Anyway, John Landis was full of fire. He was fire mad at Murphy Dunn. And I don't know, there was something went down where he fined Murphy or fired him for a week or so or something. But he was fire mad. The whole crew had been waiting, you know, for hours. It was a bad thing.
Yeah,
but that just goes to show you, you know, you don't mess around with those northern freeways, man.
Yes, yeah. Especially around Chicago.
Is that where you deliver the line, I think we should give the brothers one more try?
Mm-hmm.
And it was in right there at that phone booth, right?
That same week. We were there at that location for quite a few days. But yeah, it was that same area.
How much time did you devote to shooting it? I mean, how many days were you particularly involved in the production of the film? I mean, is it from beginning to end, or was there just a segment in there like, we're going to need you for like 6 weeks, or?
I'm not, to be honest with you, I just don't want to lie anymore, but there were periods, like when Aretha did her scene in the cafe, which took a week. I was able to go home with my family for that week. So I would say out of the 9 months, I may have been involved about 6 months, and 3 of the months I may have had off at different intervals.
So, because it is a big film, and it's a big, big production.
Oh, yeah, and you know what? They don't even make films that lengthy anymore.
No.
I mean, there are occasionally one or two. But the budgets now, you know, Hollywood's into this new thing, you know. They're cutting back on budgets, man. You know, they're making films now in 6 weeks.
You know what? If you guys put on those Barquez outfits, you get a budget for a movie. You know, it's all about superheroes these days.
And even the big budget movies, man, every rare occasion you'll find one that goes on for more than 6 months.
Right.
Yeah. But right now, man, and then, you know, Canada is the new Hollywood.
Right,
you know?
It
is.
I've heard about
it. As a matter of fact, we filmed Blues Brothers 2000 in Toronto.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Now, Rick has not seen Blues Brothers 2000.
I have not.
Wow.
I have urged him to see it.
That's where all the stars are.
It's a great... we talked about... Well, who was it that passed? We had... Oh, it was when B.B. King passed.
Mm-hmm.
I brought up... Mm-hmm. Oh,
no.
The Gator Boys.
There were quite a few people that have passed since Blues Brothers
2000. Oh, I know. I know, but I brought that up. He had no idea what I was talking about.
Coco Taylor, Billy Preston.
That's right.
The saxophone player, Isaac Hayes, Lou Ross.
We lost Isaac. Lou,
oh, yeah. There's been a lot of people.
But even in the first one, there was a lot of big names. I mean, there was John Lee Hooker there.
This one is full of people.
Full of people, yeah.
I brought up BB in the Gator Boys in that movie, and Rick just had deer in the headlights. Okay,
he was like, I can't believe I missed this.
Yeah. You know, sometimes you get attached to one. You know, sequel just doesn't.
Sequel was great.
Yeah, it was.
It got a lot because John wasn't in it.
John Landis was able to get Travis Tritt. He was able to get Lou Rawls, Coco Taylor, Grover Washington. And Grover Washington was one that's since then. Charlie Musselwhite. So many people that are in it.
Jimmy Vaughn.
He was able to get all Jimmy Vaughn. He was able to get all these people for that one weekend for about 12 hours. After those 12 hours, everybody had to split, man, you know, because they had gigs and different things like that. But it was a pleasure to be among all these entertainers, man, for those 12 hours.
I bet that was a fun hangout. That had to have been a fun thing to shoot.
In between filming, these guys jammed.
Right.
Oh, man.
Well, you're already set up, right?
There were only two drummers. That was myself and Jack DeJohnette.
Yeah, that's right.
And Jack is a very famous jazz drummer.
Yes.
Right. I got a chance to meet him and kind of just... follow him, really. I couldn't play with him. I had to follow him.
Steve, come here. Our friend Steve has been here from three flights. So you passed me a note. What was your question?
Is it true that Aretha had trouble with her part singing because she couldn't always sing it the same way twice, so they couldn't go back?
It wasn't the singing that Aretha had problems with, and she and John Landis actually had a verbal fallout, you know, where names were called. Aretha walked off the set. John Landis, being a great director, you know, he had a mark against his history with that Twilight Zone thing. But he's a great guy.
Yeah.
But he's eccentric, and he'll put you in harm's way. But he doesn't really know how to talk to you. He has verbal skills problems. You know, he and Eddie Murphy damn near physically fought.
Right.
You know,
right.
During trading places and all that stuff. Yeah. Oh, man, he's something different, man. But anyway, Aretha, I don't know where to say this. I don't want to infringe on anybody's. But she had problems pronouncing certain words, and Landis had a way of laughing at her.
John Landis
is a spoiled Jew kid, and he's had his way, and he doesn't really, you know.
Well, you don't get to be a successful director without stepping on toes either.
He got on me during the Blues Brothers.
Right.
You know, he talked crazy to me during the Blues Brothers. You know, black this or black folks this or whatever. I don't know the proper phrase that he used, so I don't want to lie again. And Duck Dunn got on him after he said some.
This just in: Jonathan Landis called Willie Hall a black something or other during the filming of the Blues Brothers.
So what happened was, whatever he said, I can't quote it because I don't want to lie again. But whatever he said, Duck Dunn didn't like it.
I bet.
Duck and Steve were responsible for getting me in the Blues Brothers movie. But anyway, Duck didn't like it. And so Duck took a pack of saltine crackers and opened them up and threw them at his feet. You know what I mean? It was Duck's way of getting back at John because John had tried to say some things that would make me feel inferior.
Right.
But it didn't work.
It didn't work.
No, it wouldn't have worked anyway, you know, because everybody knew John Landis. And then I caught John doing some things on the set that were sexually inappropriate. So anyway.
So what have you got going now? What are you doing? You're working. You got stuff going on.
Well, I want to bring attention to one fact, and I don't want to harp on it too long. But my life was devastated about 3 years ago when my wife had a stroke, and I tell you that having a stroke is an awful situation. You know, and I never knew any of that about any of that, you know, because we as entertainers, and especially if you get your ego tripping and going on and you're going about your life with all your ego and you're all pumped up about yourself, you know, you never think about other people that much. But when that happened in my family, it just brought everything to a whole different perspective, and I appreciate God for everything. But anyway, so right now I just take care of my wife. I put everything on hold. I had a cousin to ask me. He said, man, what about your career? You know, you need to put your wife somewhere. But everybody's not meant to be put somewhere. You know, sometimes you know, the best kind of remedy you can give a person is to actually just treat them normal or be there for them.
Right.
So I'm being there for my wife. This is her third year, and she's doing well, and I love her. I love you, Deborah. And my wife was an entertainer. She wrote songs and sang background for Casey and the Sunshine Band. She's pictured in a lot of his videos. And she also sang background for Isaac Hayes. She was one of Hot Buttered Soul Unlimited. She sang for such artists as Engelbert Humperdinck, Bobby Rush, Isaac Hayes, everybody.
Did you meet hanging around the studios and working with
her? Actually, she wasn't in the business when we met, but she got in the business shortly after we met as one of Isaac Hayes' background singers.
That's awesome.
A very talented woman. She's a minister of music in most of the churches here. And we're giving her a special benefit sometime this year as soon as the venue can be to be picked out. But anyway.
When you have that, let us know.
Yeah, we'll
get it out there. Yeah, we'll get some people there. Yeah.
And another thing, if there's anybody out there, any organization that would like to for us local to join us local musicians and worldwide musicians, to put on a concert to benefit stroke patients. I think it would be worthwhile. And if you have an idea for this kind of concept, contact this radio station, Radio Memphis.
Yes.
A member of the Memphis Blues Society. Contact this radio station where we can get this event started. And we can all come together and put our heads together and try to come up with something where we can raise money, raise awareness, and help the families of stroke victims.
Absolutely. If anybody out there has any wherewithal and connections and stuff like that, shoot us an email, music@pirateradiostudios.com.
Yes.
That'll be that happen. Who's this gentleman over here to your left, and what is he doing?
So, on the subject of, before we got started on the stroke situation, on the subject of what am I doing now, what I'm doing now at my age, like I say, I'm sort of retired, and there's a blessing for all the younger ones when the older ones step aside. So what I'm doing now is I'm writing a book. I have so for the last 5 years, and it's the hardest thing in the world for me, man. not only the continuity aspect, but getting. I have to be inspired to do anything, now that the old Stax days and all that is over with. I find myself being a lot lazy, but I have to be inspired, and this young man has helped me. Help inspire me a lot. His name is Richard Self, and he's the proprietor of a video company called Freelance Video One. And he and I have joined in partnership to do a video on my life as well as my career combined.
Oh, really?
And we started filming some months ago. And so we're sort of taking our time on it, and hopefully we'll be finished with it sometime before the year ends. But I want to collaborate it. I want to combine it with the release of the book that
Smart.
I'm writing, the book, the video, and maybe a CD or something like that. So, and then in conjunction with my son is a rapper. He's one of the premier gangster rappers from Memphis. He went by the name of Gangster Pat, but since the gangster thing is out in his life, he just goes by the name of Patrick Hall now. But okay. I want to give him a shout out too. He wanted to be here, but tomorrow's his birthday, so he's starting his birthday early.
But so he's following in the family business. Huh?
I hope he survives. Happy birthday, Pat. But anyway, Mr. Richard Self and his family, they're into videos. They've been working with a lot of the Memphis artists here, not just dealing with entertainment, but a variety of video projects here. And like I say, he's the proprietor of Freelance Video One. He's been helping me with the project, and I really appreciate his involvement.
Richard? I'd like to say a special thanks also to Wendy Petty. She's not here tonight, having to do some things and everything, but she's been working behind the scenes a lot. We get up here and party and play and everything, and she's the one, I guess, dots the I's and cross the T. And my wife, Charlene, she's doing the same thing. So, you know how we are. We get out there and get paid to party. And
oh, yeah.
They got to keep us straight. So, legal and all that good stuff. But we have a good time.
That's good.
Having a good time.
How did you guys meet?
We met at a friend's place. The guy that was supposed to accompany me here, his name is Alfred Brown. He's a professional dentist.
Yeah.
We all call him Dr. Brown. He has a club called, well, he doesn't like for you to call it the club, but he has a place called The Plex where they film and record music. It's located at, what is that? It's something Crump Boulevard.
Yeah.
I forget.
Really?
I think it's 385 Crump Boulevard.
And it's PLEX, the
PLEXX.
Oh, two X's.
And they specifically set this place up to record and video music.
Yes, And you can find it on the internet under soamusic.com. But anyway, he was scheduled to be here, but he and I share one thing in common. Both our wives are stroke patients. So I'm sure he was tied up tonight. And that's how we met. Richard was doing some stuff for Alfred Brown, videoing some things at his club. And I approached Richard with the project idea of filming my life story.
You guys are more than welcome to come back when you can, you know, get everybody together again. You know, you just let me know what time you want to do it. And it doesn't have to be on a Sunday night. We can do it during the week. You pick it. We'll make it happen.
Right. Amen. Wonderful. Amen.
I'm here to help you guys out. And that's kind of what we do here at Radio Memphis.
We appreciate it.
And we're certainly thrilled to have you guys here. I know it's getting a little bit late. We want to get you wrapped up. It's a little after 10 o'clock.
I've got a million questions still I can ask Mr. Hall here.
I know. Yeah.
I'm not trying to keep you though, but
and I'm open.
Boy, I could.
I'm open for at least six or seven more.
Oh, well, let me ask you this. So this is one that has stuck with me for years. When y'all shot that scene, I know I hate to bring it back to the Blues Brothers movie, when y'all shot that scene at the end of the movie in the theater, were y'all playing for real, or was it like shooting a music video? How did that work? Because you had such a crowd there.
There was a huge audience.
Yeah. Right? Were y'all literally entertaining the crowd? Were y'all
what do you
playing?
Mean, Blues Brothers 2000?
No, the first movie, because you had the big crowd in the theater.
Yeah, the Cab Calloway
scene. The Palace Hotel ballroom, the Cab Calloway
scene.
Well, the
police. No,
oh, no. You know,
National Guard and everything came in.
The Cab Calloway scene was shot at the Palladium.
Right.
Which is located on Sunset Boulevard. It's on East Sunset.
Mm-hmm.
No, those are extras. And there was a funny thing that happened that night. You know, me being young and dumb, you know, I'm happy to be there, but, you know, there's a thin line between, you know, you're doing it right and doing it wrong.
Right.
So I had to be careful, but I made a mistake that day. As a matter of fact, the last day of filming in the Palladium, the Cab Calloway scene, I got off the drums and being elated, I guess it was elated, and I took my drumsticks and threw them in the audience. And that's a very bad thing to do unless you let the audience know that you're getting ready to do it.
Oh, no.
Because one of the ladies, man, one of the ladies, and she didn't seem to be injured, but they paid her off. One of the ladies claimed that one of the sticks hit her in the eye.
Oh,
her eyes were perfectly fine to all of us. And then so John Landis, the director, he got all over me about it. You know, don't do that. If you do anything, hand them to somebody. You know, but you know how we rock.
Right.
I've seen rock stars take them and fling them out.
Oh, yeah.
Where they flip over and over, you know.
And I wonder. Head with it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's even worse.
So you guys were actually playing there. I mean, it was it was a full mix.
Well,
the reason I ask is because, I grew up with the movie, grew up with the soundtrack. Mm-hmm. I know the version of the song we're about to play.
Yes, Sweet Home Chicago,
That album track is not the same track that's in the movie. Mm-hmm. It's not the same because there's backup vocals on the album track.
Well, you know, the soundtrack was cut at some studio in Chicago. I don't want to lie again. I forget the name of the studio. And then we actually played. Now, what you do in a movie like that, or what we did was, when we weren't filming,
and
when they had to reset the cameras and the lights or whatever, we would actually perform for the audience, you know?
Yeah,
oh,
so
okay.
So that's, you're just keeping the extras entertained. Basically.
Yeah, that could have been an actual
Bernie
cut.
I heard Bernie was doing that on Soul Man.
Look, what Bernie was doing, man, was so wonderful, Samuel Jackson, you know? Not to take anything from Samuel.
But they said Bernie would just give them new full sets for the extras.
Man, Bernie would talk about a lady's breast. He'd talk about somebody's wig. Oh, man, he was...
His work in the room.
That was the legend, that he would get up there on stage.
He kept us all really, really entertained. And it wasn't like your commercial jokes. You know, he would have one-on-one. Hey, man, what you laughing about? Your teeth about to fall out.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, man, look at that woman. Look at her bra. Her bra too big. And then we would all just laugh. And that would give the camera people, you know, time to set up the angle.
To get what they needed,
Bernie was real, man. We could tell Isaac was sick at that time. If you see him in the film, you can see, you know, the neckline and all the loss.
A little gaunt. Yeah.
Which hurts my heart, really. Because Isaac and I were real tight. A lot of the tracks that were recorded by Isaac Hayes was just Isaac and Willie Hall. You know, a lot of times he would have the guitar players and whatever to lay out. And he said, come on, Clarence, let's go in. And we'd go in. And, you know, we could be tighter that way.
Yeah.
And then once he and I would go over the track and lay the track, just drums and guitar, then he'd call the bass player and the guitar player or Jesse Butler on piano or something, and they'd do the overdubs and stuff like that and sort of fill the track. But a lot of the tracks from Isaac Hayes was just Willie Hall and Isaac on piano.
Wow.
Here's what's coming up on the next episode with Rick Cheddar from Radioland.
The power of suggestion compels you to do so. That's what I want to talk about this time around. The power of suggestion in advertising. I mean, we're living in a world where almost everything has become level playing field. You know, banks is a prime example. Every bank on the planet has the same technology as the other one, by the way. You know, they just do. It's just however they want to set it up to attract your business. You know, come in now and open up an account. We'll give you a free toaster and an oven mitt. You know, that kind of... whatever entices you to come in and do it, that is the case. The silver-haired guy with the women around him at the table. I don't always drink beer, but when I do... But he's sitting there with the bottle in front of him, but he doesn't even touch the damn thing, and he's not even drinking it. And when they show him in his wild life and his escapades out into the wild, he's not drinking anything. It says, Bobby didn't like the radio station, so he killed a kid.
Rick Cheddar from Radioland is produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. You can subscribe to the show through iTunes, Player.fm, TuneIn, and Stitcher. You can also listen online and download past episodes at radio-memphis.com.
Before we get you out of here for this tune, I got to tell you, that band with the Blues Brothers, man, you guys...
Best band in the world.
Yeah.
You were the swingin'est thing,
you know,
man.
Those guys were great before I got there, man.
You
I
were great before
up.
You got there. No, come to, on. No,
no, no.
Come on.
You were the icing on the cake.
I believe it was Johnny Belushi. He delivers that great line where he's trying to talk everybody back, and he goes, "You guys were like the backbone of the best machine, this rhythm section that couldn't be stopped."
Which is and it absolutely
was,
true.
It's the truth.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, 100%.
You know, that's so. And to this day, I will
you
always
know,
believe that.
I was asking about my money, man.
look, how much we gonna get for this?
One quick story.
Yes, sir.
The line that I had, I took all my kids to the movie. No, my wife took the kids to the movie. She told me. She said, my son was so proud. Oh, little kids. He was about 9. And he was waiting for his daddy to have his great debut. And the first words came out of my mouth were curse words. he said he was sitting there like, oh, my daddy. And then when his daddy said, you got the money you owe me? And he said,
daddy.
All the kids went like, whoa.
Yeah, because it goes into how he had to rob the liquor store to pay you off.
But look, what I was getting at is this. That line, my line came back to bite me. Years after the movie had been, I was totally broke. I'm borrowing money from different guys. And guys would actually come up to me and say,
oh, no, it fell right in your face. Yeah.
You got the money you owe me. And I would actually owe them $10, $15, $20.
Art imitating life backwards is what that is.
Believe me, it's real. It's real.
I tell you what, Mr. Willie Hall, thank you so very much.
Thank you guys.
Anytime you want to come back.
I have really enjoyed myself, man.
And I'm dead serious. Anytime you want to come in and talk and just
I feel like
we didn't cover enough
Booker T and the MGs. We didn't talk about Doc enough. We didn't talk about what else you've done enough because you talk, back to some of the greats.
We didn't talk about the Earl Scruggs album.
Oh no!
Are you familiar with that?
With Earl Scruggs? Yeah.
You gotta come back.
You're gonna have to come back.
We need a part two to this.
Yeah.
Part two.
Let's do that.
A very good friend of mine was meant to come down here tonight, and it's Brad Dunn from American Duck's nephew.
Wow.
And he got stuck on the road, and he couldn't get down here tonight. And he told me to tell you that he was sorry that he couldn't make it. But next time we'll make it happen, and we'll make sure all this happens, and we'll have a good, joyous time.
Well, let's do that because I'm committed.
All right.
Thank you, my friend.
Thank you so much.
I'd like to say something before we go.
Yes, sir.
You were talking about the stroke victims and things like that.
Yes.
I rode on an ambulance for 11 years, and I saw a lot of things that a lot of people don't see.
I bet.
And I want to back up Willie and everybody else on the stroke victims. You know, let's make that happen.
Yeah.
Let's make that happen.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Let's put on a concert with all the Memphis musicians and all the local musicians.
You've got Radio Memphis behind it right now. We'll take care of it.
Yeah. And that gentleman right there, he's nodding and he's looking at me like, don't point at me. But he can make things happen.
Yeah. Wonderful.
We'll make it work.
Yes.
God is good.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, fellas. We'll get you out of here with the Blues Brothers, Sweet Home Chicago.
Love it.
It's a great tune.
Very good.
Thank you, my friend.
God bless you, and thank you all.
Absolutely.
We'll see you next time. Enjoy it very much.
The proceeding was produced by Pirate Radio Studios, Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. For more audio on demand, go to radio-memphis.com.